Hello, I'm Bob Charlock. This is number 0292, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0292. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet photographer Steve Gottlieb, the author of Flush, Celebrating Bathrooms Past and Present.
Bathrooms were never a particular interest of mine, but I did photograph a few here and there, and I was giving a slideshow of some photographs to a large group, and when I got to a few bathroom photos, I had an unusually intense reaction. It seemed people were particularly interested in them, and I got the idea that maybe nobody had done a book, and maybe I would, a book of photographs and text about bathrooms, and lo and behold, no one had ever done such a book. So I did one.
Miran Monifar is the creator of a new app called Who's On Now, which helps you find professional service people in your area. What makes this app different from others?
What ours does that nobody has done yet is an instant connect, which means you search for, you know, let's say an electrician or plumber or babysitter, whatever it is you're looking for. You search in this app on your mobile phone, and it shows you how far they are from you, and you instantly connect with that person on their cell phone. And that's what nobody has. You get to chat. So even if they don't want to give out their cell phone number, we've created an internal BBM system where you get to chat within our app.
Filmmaker Summer Moore, who wrote, produced, and starred in the horror film The Warning. What drove her to wearing so many hats on this film?
It was basically, I've been out in LA for quite a long time doing acting, writing, and I couldn't seem to get my career where I wanted to by waiting for other people to give me the parts that I wanted to get, and so I decided to take the bull by the horns and do it myself.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0292 was Bob Charlap, a TV technician who works for Fox Sports based in Dallas, also a former classmate back in the TV department at Dawson College way back in the day. Thank you very much, Bob, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? More than 150 Chicago firefighters were called to fight flames at a building housing one of the department's closest allies. Are you ready for this? Yeah. A fire extinguisher factory. Oh, the irony. Chicago Fire Department officials said the building in the Archer Heights neighborhood on the southwest side of the city ignited one night recently, and the fire worsened to three alarms by 9:30 p.m., leading to a total of 156 firefighters responding with 26 pieces of equipment. A portion of the building, which firefighters said housed a fire extinguisher manufacturing business, collapsed as a result of the intense blaze. First Deputy Fire Commissioner Charles Stewart III said, "The nature of the blaze made it difficult to reach the flames with water. We had one engine feed another engine to another engine until we got water on the fire," he said. There were no injuries, and the fire remains under investigation. Gee, do you think before the fire got out of hand, someone inside could have used, Yeah. Anyway, let's go to India for our next story, shall we? A mathematically challenged groom in India was dumped by his bride-to-be when he failed to correctly answer a basic addition problem just prior to the ceremony. Police in Uttar Pradesh said they were called to mediate between the bride and groom's families after Lovey Singh backed out of plans to wed Ram Baran when she discovered her intended husband could not add 15 and 6. Baran gave the answer as 17 instead of the correct answer of 21. Mohar Singh, the father of the bride, said Baran's family failed to disclose his lack of education before the marriage plans were arranged. Any first grade student must be able to solve the simple problems we asked. The family of the groom had kept us in the dark about the youth's qualifications, Singh said. It was a very embarrassing situation for all of us, as we had come with all preparations, and it was a matter of social prestige as well. "We have been cheated," he told the Times of India. Police mediated between the families, and both sides agreed to return all gifts they received in advance of the wedding. Well, clearly, this was a couple that just really didn't add up. Did they? Yeah. And you know, education is very important in India, and a great sense of pride. Sadly, this next story shows just how far some people will go to ensure good grades. Parents in India's Bihar state were caught on camera scaling school walls to help 10th grade students cheat on their exams. Officials said more than 600 students, possibly up to 1,600 students, were expelled in Bihar after being caught cheating on exams as 1.4 million 10th grade students sat for the tests. Education officials said many students smuggled in textbooks and notes, while pictures and video shot outside several of the state's schools recorded parents and other family members scaling walls to pass cheat sheets to students. Education Minister P.K. Shahi said it would be impossible to completely eradicate cheating without the cooperation of parents in the state. "It is impossible to hold completely fair examinations without the cooperation of the parents. There are over 1.4 million examinees, and with each of them, there are usually three, four people. Managing 6 to 7 million people is not a cup of tea for any administration. It requires parental and societal support as well," Shahi said. Prashad Sinha, who formerly served as chair of the Bihar School Examination Board, said part of the problem is the low quality of instruction in schools. "After all, unless they are taught in schools, how can they be expected to answer? Just passing the test should not be the goal, but unfortunately, that is the mindset," Sinhar said. Bihar, one of India's poorest states, has only a 64% literacy rate compared to 74% for the country as a whole. You know, I gotta tell you, when your parents are the ones who are helping you cheat, it's not exactly a strong incentive to learn, is it? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a bomb threat called into Iowa's Quad City International Airport was specific and chilling. Over several calls directly to the airport's emergency number, the man specified a pipe bomb and said, "Everybody was going to be blown up. You're going to be blown up too," the man said. "I'm sorry, I gotta do it." The airport was never evacuated, and police simply traced the number to a cell phone purchased by an airport employee. The employee, in turn, had just given the phone to her 28-year-old son, Jeremy P. Franks, who told FBI agents he was drunk and just playing to get his mother in trouble, was arrested and charged with willful threats. His mother said Franks had just spent 2.5 weeks in alcohol rehab but didn't complete the program. Yeah, no kidding. Wow. And clearly, Jeremy has some serious, serious mommy issues too. Don't you think? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest, shall we? Bathrooms are the most essential room in any building. It's also the first word we learn in foreign travel. We're all curious about bathrooms, but usually too bashful to ask questions. Well, Steve Gottlieb knows a thing or two about the bathroom and its history. He's the author of Flush, Celebrating Bathrooms Past and Present. He joins us on the line right now from Maryland. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So how did this all start for you, delving into bathrooms and photographing them?
Well, I confess bathrooms were never a particular interest of mine. I am a photographer, but I did photograph a few here and there, and I was giving a slideshow of some photographs to a large group, and when I got to a few bathroom photos, I had an unusually intense reaction. It seemed people were particularly interested in them, and I got the idea that maybe nobody had done a book, and maybe I would, a book of photographs and text about bathrooms, and lo and behold, no one had ever done such a book, so I did one.
What was the reaction you got? What were they intense about?
Well, I had a couple that were a little bit funny, It's hard to describe on the radio, but they were amusing and they got a huge amount of laughter. And then, I mean, I could just describe one. I did a self-portrait, I call it, of, shall we say, urine in the snow, my own. And when I described that as one of my best self-portraits, that got quite a reaction. And then I photographed some really unusual ones, and you could just kind of hear that audible, oh my goodness, I've never seen a bathroom that beautiful or interesting or whatever. You could just feel the reaction, you know, like a stage actor feels the reaction of an audience. And in fact, I stopped in the middle of my talk, which I'd never done before, and I said, I'm getting quite a reaction. I wonder if I ever did a book on this subject, would you buy the book? And, like, you know, dozens and dozens of hands went up, and I thought, my goodness, I'm onto something. So that's how it started.
So when you had that aha moment, you then had to focus literally on bathrooms. So what was the biggest surprise or gosh darn moment for you when putting together this book and collecting the pictures for the bathrooms that you have in it?
The biggest surprise, I suppose, is because I do a lot of public speaking, I found myself in front of a variety of audiences, and I would mention during my talk that I'm working on a book. And I said, if anyone in the audience knows of a really amazing bathroom and can give me a specific location, would you please see me after the talk? So I was doing all these talks, and just constantly people were coming up to me, and I realized that bathrooms, although people don't generally talk about them, leave a huge impression in people's minds, because I was getting one idea after another. And then people would give me contact names or send me little iPhone snapshots of things. And then when I got on the road, I had a tremendous number of leads of interesting places to go.
Now,
totally surprised by that.
When you ask for interesting bathrooms, does it say anything as far as you're concerned about the people who suggest bathrooms as to what they find interesting about them?
Yeah, I mean, each person had, they didn't just say, hey, I know an interesting one. They would describe it, and they would indicate why they thought it was unusual. Now, you know, I didn't put them on the couch and ask them why, you know, that bathroom happened to loom large in their memory, but it clearly stuck in there for a variety of reasons. And so I found that most people are turned into being pretty reliable sources about the quality of these. And now I've been giving some talks about bathrooms, and I find the same thing happening. People are coming up to me and saying, oh, I bet you missed the bathroom at such and such a place. And they're continuing to give me locations. So if I ever want to do another book, I already have a couple of dozen great location ideas for the next series of bathrooms.
Now, as a teenager, I worked as a movie theater usher in several theaters. So if you work as an usher, one of the things you have to do between shows is clean the bathrooms.
Okay.
For that reason, it's one of the people who've done the kind of job I've done have an opportunity to go into the bathroom of the other sex. And that's the thing that I find very interesting, because the men's room versus the women's room, it's very opulent in the women's room. There's usually a couch. There's usually an outer room. So when traveling around looking at bathrooms and getting people to talk about bathrooms, were you finding that more women were asking or discussing about bathrooms they'd seen, or men?
Goodness, you got me there. I don't know. All I can tell you is I didn't want to limit flush to men's bathrooms only, and so I frequently would have to have a guard of some sort stand outside the ladies' room while I was in there taking a picture, because I didn't just take snapshots. You know, my pictures are rather thoughtfully composed and lit, so I would have someone out there telling women, you know, not to go in for some period of time. I'd ask the owner, you know, it could be a hotel owner or whatever, and they'd put a barrier up temporarily while I did the photo. And you're right, you know, the women's were a little bit nicer by and large. But, you know, men are men. What can you say?
Yeah, but, you know, the women's are nicer, but in the grand scheme of things, as I've learned from previous experience, they're not necessarily cleaner.
Well, that's an area that I don't profess expertise in. There are certainly a lot of dirty ones, but I don't know whether I noticed the dirtier ones I didn't distinguish men or women. It has more to do with location and whether it's a, you know, public bathroom, for example, in New York City subway system. More than half the bathrooms are closed now because they're so filthy. And, you know, it's tough to have a public bathroom in certain locations where, for a variety of reasons, they don't get maintained and they get awfully dirty quickly. So, you know, there are places you want to avoid the public restroom for sure.
Now, the book is called Flush, Celebrating Bathrooms Past and Present. So I'm assuming that besides the pictures, you're also giving a little bit of history about the bathroom in itself, right?
Absolutely, which is a fascinating thing. And, you know, I started this book project really with photography in mind. But as I did research, I found the bathroom world of history and culture and technology absolutely fascinating. As fascinating as any little universe I've ever been in. So I wrote a lot of text about the history of outhouses or toilet paper preferences and things like that. You know, public bathrooms and pay toilets and so on. The bathroom gives you an interesting perspective on the world. Certainly it did for me. And people who've been getting my book and reading it have been telling me that while they enjoy the photos, they're equally fascinated by the information I provide. And I talk a little bit about my adventures, you know, while I traveled around and how I found things. So it was great fun to create the book. And it's fun to talk about it.
Is there a bathroom that sticks out in your mind as one that impressed you, either good, bad, or indifferent?
Well, there's so many. It's a little bit hard to say. There was a guy who was an artist who created a bathroom where everything in the bathroom was a work of art, you know, except for the toilet, but the whole tiling and the way he did the shower, you know, that's fascinating. I was particularly struck with George Washington's outhouse, which he designed himself. It's a what we call in the trade a three-holer. And one of the things I found interesting in taking pictures of some old outhouses is I learned that they aren't just one-holers. There were many. There were two, three, and more. In fact, if you go back to Roman times, they basically had outhouses that would be 15-holers. In other words, you could have 15 people sitting thigh to thigh or kneecap in a communal experience, which would almost shock us now. Everybody wants their own bathroom. Houses have, you know, multiple bathrooms, but in the old days, people would sit together, and it was almost like a social place, and we'd have trouble imagining what that's like, but that's the way it was.
Welcome to the plague, I guess, in some cases.
Well, maybe.
One of the other things, too, and we're just running out of time, I mean, the issue of even how to hang the toilet paper, I think that's as big an issue as how to solve the problem in the Middle East.
I'm not only stunned that people have preferences, strong preferences, but they feel very deeply about the issue. It's not just, hey, I like it one way or the other, over or under. But they can't imagine why other people would do it any other way. So, yes, that's one of the things that I learned in researching the book.
For me, I'm an under person. How about you?
Well, I'm an under, but that puts us in the distinct minority.
I hear that.
It's not a 50-50. It's not a flip of the coin. It's 75% are clearly defined as over. I'm one of the 25%, as are you, and very few people would say that they do it either way.
Yeah. It's a fascinating idea for a book. It's a great idea. The book is called Flush, Celebrating Bathrooms Past and Present. People can also check out your website, which is gottliebphoto.com. Steve, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
Okay, well, I thank you. If I could just mention, if you don't remember Gottlieb Photo, just put in Amazon Flush plus Gottlieb, G-O-T-T-L-I-E-B, and you can find the book. And I thank you very much for your time, Peter.
Steve Gottlieb, author of Flush, Celebrating Bathrooms Past and Present. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0292, and you'll find links to Steve's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
This is your safe haven from the hard news of the day. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for your happy place.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the creator of a new app that will help you find services in your own area. Plus, filmmaker Summer Moore and her new horror film, The Warning. Plus, we also have an idiot of the day coming your way, and also a lot more Stuff File news right here, right now. On a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, a Frenchman was detained by Polish border guards after a search of his suitcase revealed shocking contents. His Russian bride. Polish border guard officials at the Tiraspol border crossing from Belarus said they searched the luggage of a French train passenger in his 60s and discovered his large suitcase was concealing his Russian wife, who was in her 30s. The guard said the couple told them the woman was hiding in the suitcase because they feared she would not be allowed to cross the border from Belarus to Poland due to her lack of European Union citizenship. Darius Sinicki, a spokesperson for the Polish border guard, said the woman was in good shape and wasn't in need of any medical attention. Sinicki said the man was unaware that his wife would have been allowed to cross the border because he possessed the proper documentation showing their marital ties. If she had traveled sitting next to her husband, she would have gone through smoothly, Sinicki said. The man and woman were detained on a charge of attempting to evade border control. They could face up to 3 years in prison if convicted. This was the first time I've seen someone travel like this. She very well could have been a victim of human trafficking, Sinicki said. Well, one thing the French husband has going for him, he's married to a woman who is very flexible. Yeah. A man hobbled on crutches into a bar in Tallahassee, Florida, and ordered a beer. He tried to pay for it using a rock. And then, when that didn't go over well, he tore up a dollar bill and threw it at an employee. He said he had been shot up in the war, but wouldn't say which branch of the military he was in, since if I tell you, I'd have to kill you, he said. He was told to leave. A short time later, the man came back dressed in a suit and carrying a briefcase, which he set down and allegedly said to everyone, "Anyone who goes near this will die." Thinking there was a bomb inside, everyone fled the bar and someone called the police, who brought in the bomb squad. Before police arrived, the man also exited. But not only didn't he use crutches, he also was doing handstands. 23-year-old Jared M. Simpson was arrested and charged with making false bomb threats, petty theft, and disorderly conduct, and the bomb squad reported that no bomb was in the briefcase. Yeah. No need for crutches, and he was doing handstands. Did anybody check to see if the circus was in town? Then again, this story is from Florida. As this show has proved time and time again in the past, there are many people there who definitely need a checkup from the neck up. Meanwhile, a parent reported to officials at East Elementary School in Ankeny, Iowa, that a kindergarten teacher had beer in her classroom. Police were summoned, and 40-year-old Jennifer L. Rich told them that she only had two beers at lunch. Officers found two empty beer cans and four full ones in her classroom. Rich was arrested for public intoxication. A breath test pegged her blood alcohol level at 0.145%, which is nearly double the limit for driving. But school officials didn't notify parents right away because they were, quote, still in the midst of trying to figure out from police exactly what they were planning on doing regarding criminal charges. This according to Jennifer Owenson from Ankeny Community School District Human Resources. She's actually the director of human resources there. Now, once that was done, Owenson admitted they still didn't notify the school board. We just wanted to make sure that we have the whole picture before we file a complaint with them, because that would require them to examine her license and perhaps take it away, she said. We're going to give it a couple of weeks. By the way, Rich didn't give it a couple of weeks. Jennifer herself, she simply resigned. And there you have it. We can expect drunk teachers to have more integrity than the school's HR director. You know, I'm trying to remember back when I was a kid. I can't remember, but at what grade did we learn to sing the song 99 Bottles of Beer on the Wall? I'm sure it wasn't kindergarten. Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Okay, we have a couple of items here with people who are either unclear on the concept or are gifted with offering less than compelling explanations. You can call these folks clueless in Florida's panhandle. Yes, more people from Florida. These never end. Number one, 58-year-old Deborah Mason was arrested for theft of a pickup truck in Destin, Florida in January. And according to police, Mason said she knew it was stolen property, but didn't think it was that stolen. What does that stolen mean? Is there a degree of stolen? Yeah. Wow. Anyway, and number two, 10 miles away in Mary Esther, Florida, in February, 54-year-old Robert Pursley was arrested for DUI and asked about items in his truck. According to the police report, Pursley insisted that everything was his except for anything illegal. A baggie of cocaine was in the truck's center console. Yeah, so I'm guessing he's just the chauffeur of anything illegal. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to the next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Looking for a professional to do a service in your area? Well, now there's an app for that. Miran Monifar is the creator of the One app, and One stands for Who's On Now, which is something that came out of his own frustration with finding an electrician. He joins us on the line right now from Florida. Hi, Miran.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
So you've had this idea for an app, and right off the bat I'll ask, you know, there are things that you can get on your phone nowadays from people like the Yellow Pages, for instance, and the Better Business Bureau. What makes your app unique?
Well, what makes our app unique is we have an instant connect search engine. And what that means is, like Yellow Pages, or there's other apps out there, like Angie's List and things like that. You basically, it's really like a glorified Yellow Pages. It really tells you where people are, and that's it. It's a new way of the Yellow Pages, really. What ours does that nobody has done yet is an instant connect, which means you search for, you know, let's say an electrician or plumber or babysitter, whatever it is you're looking for. You search in this app on your mobile phone, and it shows you how far they are from you, and you instantly connect with that person on their cell phone. And that's what nobody has. You get to chat. So even if they don't want to give out their cell phone number, we've created an internal BBM system where you get to chat within our, you know, within our app. So that's what nobody has done yet.
Sounds like an amazing idea. And as I said, this came out of your own frustration looking for an electrician, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was, you know, I needed an electrician on the spot to do an emergency service. And, like, you know, I did what everybody pretty much does is go to Google and type in electrician. Then I got, you know, electrical supplies. I got electrical companies, you know, all mixed and scattered and everything. So then I started calling, you know, the secretary would pick up and say, you know, we can't have somebody there today. Can we have them send them to Wednesday? Or we try another number. It was out of service.
I would try another number, and the person would say, well, no, you know, our electrician's not on site right now. Can I take a message? And I said, this is crazy. I mean, there's got to be an app out there that, you know, you just go on the app and you search and you find and you connect. And then, you know, I did some research and there wasn't. So then I said, you know what? We're going to create one. And that's how it came about.
So the Who's On Now app, one of the things when you call someone, like you say, cold call someone like you needed to do for an electrician, you're really not sure what you're getting. You're really not sure the qualifications or the history of somebody. Does the Who's On Now app help with that?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. And that's, you know, in our lives, everyday life, you know, when we, you know, take a taxi or we hire anybody, that's the risk that we take. We really never know what we're going to get. But right now what we're building is a review system. And it's not like where anybody can just go on and write a review. You have to do a transaction with that person. And then the system will let you write a review. So what I mean by that is, you know, let's say Mary hires Bob the plumber. Bob comes over and fixes her toilet, for example. When that transaction is done and Mary has paid Bob and everybody's happy, Mary then gets to write a review on Bob. And that's how you know these reviews are real. As you know, most reviews these days, I can go online and write a review about anything and anyone without ever doing a transaction with them. But we don't allow that. We only let reviews be written on people that you've done a transaction with. So it's very, very real.
Now, there are obviously two sides to this. You, as someone who is looking for a service, can use your app, Who's On Now, to find someone, but it's also great for the people who have services. So how do they get involved?
Yeah, exactly. So so you mean they want to promote themselves, right?
Right.
Yeah, so you download the app. It's absolutely free. And we have a merchant profile and a customer profile. So a customer is someone that's, you know, obviously searching for people. You sign up as a customer and you search the app. Those customers are not visible to anybody else in the app because they're just customers. They don't want to be seen by anybody else. But if you're a merchant, you know, self-employed, you have a business, anything, you want a side job, you're a student, you want some extra income doing tutoring or shoveling the snow or cutting the lawn, whatever it is, you know, from a professional to somebody that's in high school, you basically download the app for free. You sign up as a merchant and you put in, you know, what you do, your credentials. If you have any licenses, you put it up. We have a section there for portfolio. You can load up pictures, videos, and, you know, then that way you get found. If you sign up as a merchant, then everybody sees you. So whatever it is that you are, when you search, you come up as a merchant.
Now, can you be both? I mean, I can understand a situation where an electrician might need a plumber.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good question. And actually, everybody in life is really both, because once you're a customer, you know, looking to buy something or do a transaction, hire somebody, you always have to do something for life. So you're also a merchant. So yeah, so as merchants, that's why I recommend, you know, everybody signing up as merchants, because then as a merchant, you can search, you know, for other people, connect with them, and you're visible to everybody also. As a customer, once you sign up as a customer, you simply go into settings and you switch yourself to merchant. If you want to switch back and forth from a customer to merchant, it's very easy. Just go to settings, switch yourself to merchant, and now you're visible to everybody. Or you can just sign up as a merchant to begin with. That way you can connect as a customer or you can be found as a merchant.
We should mention the website again, and then it's whosonnow.com.
Right.
How long has the app been in operation and how's it going?
Well, we just came out literally a few months ago. We came out in October, November in the beta version. You know, we didn't just, you know, friends and family and things like that. We wanted to, you know, test it out and fix everything like that. And then we got picked up by CP24 Breakfast Television in Toronto. They came in, you know, they asked me to come in. I did a live interview with them. And then we got tons of downloads there. And then just recently, we've officially, you know, letting the word out, and people like yourself that interview me and let the word out. It's great. We've got you know, great feedback from everybody. We're getting tons and tons of customers that are signing up, which shows you there's a huge demand for people trying to instant connect with other merchants. So, you know, if any merchants are listening to this, or if you got a product or a service or anything you do in life, just go on and download it and load up your profile and get found.
And I'm guessing that it's not limited to borders in any way, shape, or form?
Sorry, it's not limited to what? Borders?
Borders.
No, definitely not limited to borders at all. We've signed a worldwide contract with Apple. Right now, we're only in the Apple App Store. We're coming out with Android in about 3 weeks. But yeah, it's worldwide. So far, we're getting downloads, obviously, from North America, you know, Canada and United States. We've got a couple, you know, around the world, but, you know, not, I don't know how they heard about it or whatever. But yeah, it's definitely worldwide. That's the goal. We're, you know, eventually, you know, we're focusing on North America right now, eventually go all over the world. And, you know, we're talking to three lawyers to patent it, one from Boston, actually, one from Toronto, and one from Florida. And we're in the process of trying to patent it, but they say that it might be hard, but it could be doable. But in the meantime, we've trademarked the word Instant Connect Search Engine, and that's what we like to be known for. We like you to search, find, and connect immediately with that person.
Now, you mentioned lawyers being involved. You have to have always, you know, dot your I's and cross your T's. And I'm just wondering, has there ever been a concern or any worries about people using it in nefarious ways? You know, just as good as Uber is for taxis, there are people who are concerned about some of the drivers, for instance, you know, how people are using it, that kind of thing. Has there ever been a concern for you with Who's On Now in that regard?
Well, we're monitoring. I mean, of course, I mean, you can get, you know, various different illegal activities that people do sign up to try to promote themselves. But, you know, we monitor everybody that signs on and, you know, we check their background. Not check their background, I don't mean like criminally or anything like that. I just mean, you know, we do a search on them on Google, see who they are. You know, Maria from the office will give them a call, welcome them, just to get a little bit of, you know, feedback from them and background and things like that. So, but if it's something illegal activities, you know, things like that, we definitely, you know, take those guys right off. We don't allow that, obviously.
Now, it's an app that works on your mobile phone, but can it also work, you know, for some people who don't have mobile phones, maybe just have a desktop or a tablet, would it work there?
Yeah, it works on tablets, on iPads right now, but it's funny you asked about desktop, because we are also, I didn't even mention desktop, but we are also building desktop. It's going to come out about a month after Android. People usually do desktop first and then mobile. We actually went the other way around. We think there's a mobile world, and every day the mobile users are, you know, growing, and it's going to take over the desktop. But you're right. There is still people that are sitting at their home on the desktop and just want to search. So, yes, we will have that, I would say, in about 5-6 weeks from now. 3 weeks from now, Android, and about a few weeks after that is desktop version.
Well, it's, again, great idea for an app, and it's Who's On Now. People can go to the website, whosonnow.com. Marianne, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me. It's great. Very nice talking to you.
Marianne Monifar, creator of the app Who's On Now. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0292, and you'll find links to the app. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Lawsuits filed under the Americans with Disabilities Act often result in some very unusual verdicts. For example, a 911 operator whose narcolepsy condition made him fall asleep on duty sued under the ADA after being fired. Amazingly, he was allowed to keep his job even after snoring during one emergency phone call. But what happens when an ADA lawsuit pits two disabilities against each other? Well, in Connecticut, a taxi driver with a phobia of dogs sued his employer after he was fired for refusing to give a ride to a blind person with a service dog. The verdict? An appeals court ruled that transporting disabled individuals and their service animals constitutes an essential function of a cab driver's job, so in this case, the driver lost. Let's be fair, with so many conflicting laws today, employers are often sued no matter what they do. And now that some health care benefits under the Affordable Care Act are out of step with the ADA, it's not going to get any easier for job providers either. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that puts a smile on your face and a skip in your step. Please avoid skipping if you are driving.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to filmmaker Summer Moore. Plus, we have an idiot of the day coming your way. And, of course, more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program I also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Ransom IB Middle School in Charlotte, North Carolina, has a strict dress code requiring, for example, only hunter green outerwear. Thus, on January 27th, when parent Chanda Spates dispatched her three kids in improperly hued coats, Ranson officials confiscated the contraband clothing, leaving the three, along with 20 other sartorial miscreants, to make their way home after classes with no outerwear at all, though the temperature that afternoon was in the 30s Fahrenheit. And I'm not talking high 30s either. That's close to freezing, folks. Now, following parental outrage, the administrators apologized. I'm guessing that if one child, just one child, gets so much as a sniffle, lawyers will be descending on that school like a pack of rabid dogs, and they won't be wearing Hunter Green. Just a guess on my part. Meanwhile, we have 139 frogs, toads, lizards, and turtles, said Ms. Thayer Cutter. She told this to Seattle's MyNorthwest.com in March, touting her Edmonds, Washington amphibian rescue shop, especially the heroic job done recently on Rocky, the Texas toad who came with stones in his tummy. He had to have a lot of enemas, but Rocky is rock-free now, and after passing all the pebbles, is finally able to eat. Add Thayer, turtles are underrated pets, very social, and love massages and cuddling. Yeah, well, Thayer is probably the 21st century version of the cat lady. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest, our last guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, speaking of little critters and creatures, cockroaches can be bold explorers or shy and withdrawn, according to recent work by researchers at Belgium's Université Libre de Brussels, who caught a bunch of them, affixed radio tags, and study their movements. Explorers are necessary for locating food sources, although, obviously, they are also most likely to find roach motels. Shy, cautious roaches are necessary for survival and group stability, and a mixture of the types ensure cockroaches' legendary survivability. A Mother Nature News commentator wrote, hopefully, that understanding roaches' personalities might make us less quick to grab a shoe. Yeah, really? No, I think most people will still want to tap dance all over their little heads. But that's just me. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here on the Stuff File program for this week, shall we? Filmmaker Summer Moore has a new horror film coming out called The Warning. Not only has she produced and written the picture, she's also the star. Summer joins us on the line right now from Colorado. Hi, Summer.
Hi, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for doing this.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, you've created this horror story, this film. What was the impetus for you to, first of all, do everything as you've done in this particular movie?
I like pain. No. It was basically, I've been out in L.A. for quite a long time doing acting, writing, and I couldn't seem to get my career where I wanted to by waiting for other people to give me the parts that I wanted to get. And so I decided to take the bull by the horns and do it myself.
So since it's, you say it's a role that no one was writing for you, are you naturally a fan of horror films?
Yes, I've always been a fan of horror films, but I hadn't written horror films. I didn't think that was something I really could do. Like, I've write thrillers and comedies and dramas and things like that, but not horror.
Now, you know, one of the things that's interesting is if you come across a horror picture that is helmed or written by women, it's a different slant on what... Mm-hmm. What is horror? There's not a lot of gore, but there is a lot of scare and suspense. Would you
yep.
agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that a lot of the horror movies currently they've kind of lost the scariness to them because now they're just about gore and nakedness and things like that. And I just think it's more the things you don't see that are scarier than the things that you see with blood and guts and whatnot.
So someone who works as an actress and as a writer, now that you've got all these balls in the air, as it were, speaking about a horror film, was the scary part deciding that you were going to go out and do this?
I didn't really know everything I'd gotten into because it was my first feature to produce, and let alone produce it by myself. So once I got involved in it, it was like, oh my gosh. But as far as the writing of it, that was scary because I had to investigate actual satanic cults and talk to religious leaders of the satanic religion, and so that was a little bit scary, like walking on the edge of, do I really want to do this?
Well, that brings me to the topic of the film itself. So tell us, what is the plot for The Warning? And I got to give you a warning right now, just based on what you've already said, I know it's a film I will not be seeing. But I know there's a lot of horror fans out there that are probably chomping at the bit to see a film like this.
Uh-huh. Well, it's based on actual events. I grew up in Colorado, and these events took place within Colorado. I know a lot of movies say they were based on actual events, but this really was. So I grew up with this kind of stigma of this town known as it's the devil-worshipping capital of the Western world. And so there were scary things that went on down there and whatnot. And then later on in life, I decided, well, after the Satanic Panic in the 1980s and 90s of the United States, I thought, nobody's done a movie about the Satanic Panic that I've ever seen and why. It was such a big era in United States history. So that's where I came about coming up with the idea of doing the story about Satanism. But it's all, most of them are actual events, but of course I weave those within another part of the story. So not everything in the film is... It's not a documentary or anything like that. It's just I took the interviews of the people that I researched before I wrote it, and then I went ahead and, made my own little story out of it.
So when you were writing this, were you writing it in bright sunlight at high noon?
No, as a writer, you usually write till 4 a.m. or something like that. You know, it was more actually the talking to the Church of Satan and researching the a Satanic Bible and things like that, and watching actual rituals that they do, was the scary stuff.
What was it? I mean, you said you were familiar with the subject matter because of what was going on in your own backyard, literally while you were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But in doing the research, what surprised you? What did you learn that was an aha moment for you before you started writing all this?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say it was before I started writing it. It was while I was doing research on it and whatnot. So I was at the time still writing. I had ideas what I was going to do with things and whatnot. But I would say it was very interesting to me that in this satanic religion, how they actually operate and the things that they believe are not quite as scary as people make them out to be. It's kind of like a lot of religions, humans take them out of context and then get crazy with them and kind of turn them into something that they're typically not supposed to be doing. So they're not supposed to be doing sacrifices. And as you may recall, in the 80s and 90s, there were kids that were doing sacrifices and then killing people and then therefore getting put in jail and stuff like that. So they were taking that out of context. And they also don't believe in the devil. So that was very interesting to me because the devil's just like something of the Christian religion that's kind of thrown in there, but the satanic religion doesn't believe in that. So it's just a different kind of thing. Like, wow, I didn't realize some of the stuff that they believe is not really that bad, you know?
Now, a lot of both horror films and science fiction films are usually allegories for other things that are going on in society at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say there's some of that in your film?
As far as the satanic part of it, or
just an underlying expose on people and how they treat religion in the first place.
Well, I mean, again, it would be it just has to do with the satanic religion in general. So, I mean, there are people that are Satanists out there, and so that is obviously still going on within our world. But I don't know that I would really say it's an underlying. I don't really think that there is. It's more like a take on what used to happen more often in the 80s and 90s during the satanic panic. But again, it may be happening somewhat in small places around the world or the United States right now, but we just don't know about it.
Now, you live in California now, right?
Yes, sir.
You came back home for a screening on, ironically, the Ides of March.
Yes.
what was that like for you?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
What was that like for you, having a screening in Colorado, in Denver?
Oh, it was awesome. It was really like a hometown welcome. I felt just like a guest of honor. They were all very excited about it. And then we had a Q&A after the premiere, and people were standing up telling me, this is exactly what I grew up with. You hit the nail on the head. Like, I saw these things. And then later on, I talked to one of the gentlemen about it, and he was just telling me stories of, like, you got it. Everything I was coming up with, you got in there. And it was just like, that was really cool because these people could confirm what I'd written. It wasn't just all I made it up and whatnot. And I know that there are people that don't know any of this stuff went on. Like, I had talked to my mom about this when I was originally starting to write it, and she was like, what? That went on down there? No. Like, she'd never heard of it. So, I mean, there were definitely people that did not know anything about it. But it was awesome to come back to Colorado and, you know, introduce the subject that they used to have in a dark past, I guess.
From the time that you got the idea for doing this and you started writing it or researching it and then writing it and to the completed film, what was the time frame?
The time that I started, originally I wanted to do it as more an improv, so because we had such a short shooting schedule, I didn't want to stop and memorize all these lines, and everybody kept forcing me to do a screenplay, so I said, once I wrote it, I said, well, now we've got to learn the lines, because I took the time to write this whole thing. So I wrote the screenplay pretty quickly, I would say within a month or less. I mean, I can write screenplays pretty quickly once I have the idea of what I want to do. And that was probably May of 2013. We filmed September of 2013. And then post-production, we completed the majority of that by March of 2014. And then within that, I was looking at distribution deals and whatnot. And then we went a little bit different of a route than we had originally planned and kind of took it back into post-production again just so we could retweak it a little bit and make it a little scarier and whatnot. So, and now we're having the premiere. So, I mean, overall, the film took less than a year to complete everything.
And now that it's out, or at least now that you've had your premiere, when will the general population get a chance to see it?
They can see it now. It's actually, we're selling the DVDs. The distributor's selling them online at their website. We're selling on Amazon, although we're sold out right now, and I just sent a whole nother shipment to Amazon. On our Facebook page, people can order DVDs there, as well as we've got streaming sites. There's a streaming site called Film Canal that will stream it, as well as sell digital copies. And then we're in the middle of getting Google Play, iTunes, and Xbox to take, they're in quality control right now, so as soon as that gets up, then we'll have streaming. And then the rest of the world, we've got some distribution deals we're working on right now, and as you may know, distribution takes a long time. It's not like, oh, handshake, and then we're on our way. So hopefully that'll be within like a month or a couple months, and then the rest of the world can use other sites where they may have theatrical release around the world in other countries. So
overall, that would be awesome. Overall, now that your film is finally out, Will you do it again? Will you produce and write and star in a film again?
Yeah, absolutely. I won't produce alone. I've actually already done another short film that's in just finishing up post-production this week, and then we'll be done with that. And I swore I would not produce again by myself, but I did. But as far as the feature film, I will not produce by myself again because it was just too much work to be lead actress, producing, writer, location scouting, casting. Like, all the things that I did were just kind of atrocious. So, yeah, we're actually in development on our next film. It's called And the Dead Shall Walk, and it's another horror film. Well, I've got the horror thing going. I might as well keep it, you know. I got my director and I have my executive producer. They both like the script. So we're just got to find the money is the next problem. But what's new with that?
Exactly. Well, both in the movie itself and in the putting the movie together, the devil's in the details.
Yeah.
The movie is called The Warning. And Summer, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
Filmmaker Summer Moore. Again, her movie is called The Warning. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0292, and you'll find links to where you can get the film. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. A couple of more Stuff File news to get to. Actually, one more before we get to the idiot of the day. So let's get to it right now. Ontario Provincial Police officers with the North Perth Detachment in Listowel said they ticketed 28 drivers for distracted driving in a 12-hour period in front of their own police station. I am absolutely shocked that within meters of our OPP detachment window, we see such blatant disregard for the law, said Sergeant Mike Scott. It is also upsetting to realize that these drivers are just the tip of the iceberg. While the officers were dealing with all of these violators, other motorists saw this and quickly put away their devices. Each driver received a $280 ticket. You know, some people just don't seem to get the message. Perhaps we should text it to them. No, maybe not. I came very, very, very close to making these morons the idiot of the day, but I didn't. Came oh so close. Oh so close. But this, boys and girls, this is the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff I'll present, the idiot of the day.
Actually, here's a couple of criminals who really are not ready for primetime crime. Number one, 21-year-old Tyler Langford attempted a robbery of Minerva's Bakery in McKeesport, Pennsylvania in January, committing, according to police, the rookie mistake of laying his gun on the counter so he could pick up the money with both hands. The clerk grabbed the gun and Langford fled, but was arrested in March. But this second guy, he really takes the cake. There are expert counterfeiters, and then there is 22-year-old Cass Adler, convicted by a court in Prince Edward Island of trying to pass $100 bills that have been printed on napkins, but affixed by Adler to thicker paper. Wow. Now, most criminals are usually not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but these two clowns, especially our napkin counterfeiter, can't possibly have anything but a slight breeze between their ears. I mean, what kind of person thinks that $100 bills printed on napkins are going to get past even a blind man? Well, one kind of person, and one kind of person only. An idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0292. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0292. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.